Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. It appears any negotiated end of the Ukraine conflict is now unrealistic. Trump's most recent reversal may be something he will be unable to walk back. Add to this Europe's unoriginal and unworkable 12-point plan for Ukraine. Clearly, peace is not on the table. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, Tariq Cyril Ahmad in Istanbul. He's an historian and political commentator. And here in Moscow, we have Dmitry Babich. He is the deputy foreign editor at Komsomolskaya Pravda Daily. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with Tariq. You heard my introduction. It seems that I have made a shift in my position here. I've been always been trying to balance everything that we hear and pepper it with a lot of hope, but that peppering of hope is dissipated in my mind, given Trump's recent decisions. We have to point out that his administration is uniquely adding sanctions on Russia. This is something new. So have we just reverted to the Biden policy on Russia? Again, we'll talk about the Europeans in the second part of the program. Tariq?
My answer to that would be that, first of all, I'm in the same position you are in. I've had a bias toward hope. I would even accuse myself of wishful thinking, and that has to go now. Trump has shown us that, and the Europeans do that all the time anyhow. So are we back to Biden? I think we are not exactly back to Biden, but we are back to a U.S. policy that is at least as bad as Biden's policy. That's what we are seeing. And in some ways, it could even devolve or evolve to be worse. I, like you, think that peace is off the table for now, and so is obviously a ceasefire. For one reason, Trump has reverted to a ceasefire as a goal, which he had given up after the Alaska summit. That was one big progress of Alaska that came out of that, was that Trump finally saw reason and agreed with the Russians that they should go for peace directly, not ceasefire. He's reverted on that. He's added these terrible sanctions on Rosneft and Lukoil. They are terrible. They will do damage. Even the Financial Times already admits that Russia will find ways to work around them within months at the latest. But of course, as Putin has also said, and that's inevitable, they have damaged the relationship between the U.S. and Russia once again. One fact I would like to add, I don't want to take up too much time. We have now news that the Russians at least are claiming that they have surrounded 10,000 Ukrainian troops. Okay. That would be a major event. I would think that either even this year or next year, we would see more of that. And that once Ukraine's position has become even worse, then there will probably be a return to negotiations on the side of the West. And this is an old pattern. They always wait until Ukraine has lost even more to at least try to think about negotiations.
Well, Dima, I'm in complete agreement with what Tariq had to say, and I'll pull the thread even further. Well, at this point, I mean, we had the Anchorage summit, which was controversial even on this program. I go back to the adage, it's better to talk than not talk. Okay, so that's a starting point. And particularly since the Biden administration had blockaded any kind of normal communication. But we did Anchorage. Okay, that was the icebreaker, as they say. And it was positive in my mind is that the Russians got to, without a filter, to say what their position is, okay? I mean, to say this is, you hear a lot of things. You got people like Keith Kellogg around you. We're going to give you the unvarnished view from our perspective. And it was valuable from that. Tariq has already pointed out, Trump understood, oh, peace is better than a ceasefire. But now I'm calling this program No Return. Why would the Russians take any overture from the Trump administration seriously by now?
If there is the slightest chance for peace, Russia tries not to miss it. So, if you listen to Mr. Trump, you can easily lose patience. You know, first he scolds Zelensky, then he says he's disappointed with Putin. He cites wild figures like 1.5 million Russians dead. Where did he take that? You know, then he says inflated, he cites inflated figures of American support for Ukraine, $250 billion. So anyone can lose patience, but we're dealing here with human lives. And I would like our Western listeners to understand, look, if Ukraine stays a country hostile to Russia with Western missiles on its territory, this is the danger for the whole world, because in case of an attack, Russia will have to switch to the nuclear option immediately. There will be no time left for, you know, pondering what's going on, finding a solution. So it's basically in the interest of world security for Ukraine to be neutral. And this is something Russia is requiring. And when we heard from Washington again that, you know, all fighting has to cease right now, you know, just freeze, you know, the answer from the reaction from our foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, was, wait, this was not something we agreed on in Anchorage. We agreed on removing the root causes of the conflict. And the root cause, you know, you can find them. You can find these root causes in the Western media. New York Times reported there were several CIA hubs on the territory of Ukraine spying on Russia. So-called training centers with British instructors on the Black Sea, you know. They looked more like NATO bases than training centers. So these are the root causes. They were not removed, and they are not being removed. For that reason, we can't stop the fighting. So, I mean, on the surface, Europe tries to present it as, you know, Zelensky and Trump want peace, and Putin just doesn't want to stop the fighting. That's not the case.
Well, Dima, throwing it back to Tariq, another narrative they keep pushing incessantly, which I find annoying in the extreme. They're talking about land and territory and all that. This is a conflict. The origins are lack of security for all partners in Europe. When Russia is insecure vis-a-vis NATO, all of Europe is insecure. And this is very simple geopolitical thinking that they refuse to accept. They keep talking about land and land. Why does the largest country in the world want more land? It doesn't make any sense. And that's a cover for not to talk about the failure of pan-European security since the end of the Cold War.
Yes, I agree with you on that. I mean, the reducing Russia's motives to a land grab, that's disinformation, that's propaganda, it's Western propaganda, right? It's from the same stupid narrative that pretends that somehow the cause of the war is that Putin can't distinguish between Ukraine and Russia and all that sort of stuff, right? We know that the cause of the war is a real geopolitical problem, and the geopolitical problem has been caused by the West, literally caused by the West. We went far too far, we the West, toward Russia, and it really reached a peak, not the last one, in 2008, Bucharest, when they started promising Ukraine NATO membership. And from there, this conflict has flowed. That's the root cause that needs to be addressed. Now, I would add one thing to what you've just said, Peter. I think what happens when people focus on land, land, land all the time, it's not that land doesn't play a role. By now it does, by now. But they get the order of priorities wrong. For instance, when Russia has a demand that it wants the rest of Donbass, this isn't about land. This is about the fact that the rest of Donbass contains a specific concentration of American fortresses and soldiers and military forces. And when Ukraine is up until now unwilling to give in on that point, it's about that as well. It's not simply about the land. It is never simply about the land. Behind it is what you say, the failure we all have been through, but I really see it as caused by the West, to finally find a balance again in which everybody, including Ukraine, can feel safe.
Including Ukraine. Exactly. Dima, after the U.S. imposed sanctions on Rosneft and Lukoil, to tell our audience, two of the major energy concerns in Russia, very important for their export policy as well. Vladimir Putin said, no self-respecting nation makes decisions under pressure. That's a change in tone here. It seems that the Russian position is stiffening. And it does beg the question, well, obviously, Russians are self-respecting and they will react. We could see reaction showing the displeasure of the Russian side, which I have known you, Dima, for many, many years. And I have always asked you, where does this self-restraint come from? And I'm asking you that question now. Where does it come from? And will it be maintained?
Well, the self-restraint comes from the European dream of Russia. Russia is a European country, which the rest of Europe doesn't see as European. That's the tragedy. That's the source of frustration. And then the most recent events, you know, which were, of course, almost unnoticed in the West, but Latvia, a member of the European Union, said any foreigners can buy real estate in Latvia, except Russians and Belarusians, you know. And this was acceptable. This was proclaimed acceptable by the European Union with all of its talk about equality and protection, legal protections of people and human rights. How does that, you know, fit the European dream? Of course it doesn't. So that's why people here, not only Putin, are losing patience. But I would say that this is very consequential. This is very much Putin style. I will not do anything under pressure. We can have an agreement. We can make concessions out of goodwill. But we will not do it if you kill our people. You know, that was Putin's style when he talked to the terrorists in Beslan, in Dubrovka. You know, these people wanted political moves from Russia, killing civilians. The response was no talk at all about political concessions, just destruction of the terrorists. In the same way, Putin is now saying, I respect Mr. Trump, but try not to insult him on the public level. I mean, if you listen to the Kremlin, if you listen to Dmitry Peskov, there are never any personal insults against Trump. But this is a show of frustration. We will not do it under pressure.
Well, Tariq, before we go to the break here, we saw in the last week the Europeans tearing their brains out how to legally steal Russia's central bank accounts in Europe. I mean, it was really a circus to watch. Okay, real quick, go ahead, Tariq.
Well, they haven't stopped yet.
They haven't stopped
by themselves, but they set themselves another deadline for December. It may still happen, unfortunately. And let me add one point that should always be added. In the end, this is collateralized actually by European taxpayers. That's the dirty secret behind this whole thing.
Absolutely. Somebody's always going to have to pay, and it's always the public, citizens and voters. So far, the political elites go unscathed. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To mind you, we're discussing some real news. And the news I want to talk about with Dima right now is really unimaginably, but probably also unsurprisingly, the Europeans have come up with a 12-point, not 20, 12, okay? Well, Moses had 10, but, you know, so but the Europeans have come up with 12, with no land concessions. And we can go on and on. I don't want to go through it point by point because it's a waste of time. But this is the Ukraine project is now, let's make it Trump's vanity project. Obviously, this 12-point program is borrowed from, stolen from, plagiarized from the so-called 20-point peace plan for Gaza, which is a farce in itself, but not the topic of this program. Dima, this is a way to convince Trump that the Europeans' idea is really their idea. This is what it looks like. Oh, apparently, he'll be the chairman of a board. I mean, again, not very imaginative. Dima.
The competition to please Trump.
Exactly.
Something I don't think he really deserves. But it's amazing how these people who just recently, you know, in 2024, last year, they were blasting Trump, you know, saying he was a danger to humanity, showing their open support for Kamala Harris, Now suddenly they are all great fans of Trump. He is a daddy. I think Mark Rutte used that expression. So, you know, putting the morals aside, putting the hypocrisy aside, this is not a realistic plan. I mean, it states that Ukraine should be able to defend itself. Basically, it states that Ukraine should be militarized. That is unacceptable. And the land, if we talk about the land, the land in the case of Ukraine is security. Crimea, you know, yes, we need a land bridge to Crimea, you know, because the bridge which connects Crimea to the rest of Russia, how many times they said they were going to attack it? How many calls to attack it we heard from the United States? Even before 2014, I remember certain hawks, you know, writing that it's a legitimate target for Ukraine, whatever. So basically, this is a non-starter. This is a non-starter. But the aim of the European Union is to convince Trump that this is his idea and Putin is not accepting his ideas. So this is basically a very, I would say, corrupt way of doing things. Pleasing an old man and then pitting that old man against some country.
Yeah, I mean, Tariq, I mean, one of the things that it's very interesting and it's gotten very little commentary over the last 3 years or so is that why is the EU doing this? I mean, isn't this a NATO job? I mean, we see the militarization and the growing authoritarianism of Brussels and the European project, which I found really interesting. I know both of you follow it as closely as I do. A meeting after, I can't keep up with all of their meetings, okay? They have like formal and informal and this E2 and E7 and I can't keep up with it all. And so they went brainstorming to come up with this 12-point plan. And it took a lot of work and a lot of compromises, you know, it's chronicled, but they never consider what the Russians might think. I mean, that's why it's a farce. Tariq.
That's been the problem of Western policy since this war really became a major issue, since at least 2022, that once again we see an attempt to resolve the war without the side which is actually winning it, right? Russia is winning this war on the ground, and the 12-point plan is a plan that applies to a situation in which Russia is not winning. And it's completely irrelevant. That's why. And we've seen this before. We've seen this with the Bürgenstock farce, if anybody remembers this. And the EU will just not let go of that. They insist on living in their own world, which is ironic because they charged Putin with doing that, right? And the yes. Russian position is actually attached to reality. The EU position is completely unrealistic by now. And the idea is just to stick it out and apply more money and more arms until somehow that changes, and it won't change except to the disadvantage of Ukraine and to the disadvantage of the Europeans, of course. And they don't want to accept that. They're in denial. And I don't know when that fever will break. But the other question you asked about why is it the EU and not NATO? I think you've given the answer yourself already. The EU is now in the process of becoming a massive military player. And people are saying it loudly in the European Parliament. They want the EU itself to become a massive military alliance. You know, Weber has said it just yesterday, I think. Ursula von der Leyen is clearly after that. They are going into debt at the national level, at the EU level. It's very clear that they want to evolve the EU into a militaristic unit. And NATO and the Americans are not afraid of it. And the reason for that is that, perversely enough, while the EU is doing that, making itself militarily stronger if they can, it is also even more dependent on NATO and America than before. I think this is the key. The Americans allow this because the vassalage of the EU is so complete. So for the Americans, it's a win-win. You know, they get a vassal, but the vassal can contribute more militarily to their strategies on which they will decide.
And Tariq, if things go south, well, that was a European project.
You can cut them off. Yes.
No, I think this is an important motif that has to be front and center all the time. Trump is very indecisive, dangerously indecisive at times. But one thing is for sure is that if he can't get an instant gratifying win, he's going to shove it off onto somebody else. And when Ukraine is lost, as they like to say, he'll say, I had nothing to do with it. That's part of this strategy here. Dima, it's quite obvious, even a cursory review of the Western media, legacy media, is that the Europeans are dead set on continuing this war, irrespective of the consequences for Ukraine. I mean, that's really one of the most remarkable things. They truly believe that just a little bit further, push a little bit harder, spend a few more billion here and there, and Russia will collapse. And given what Tariq just said, by the time the collapse comes, the Europeans will be so strong militarily that they'll be able to confront Russia. They are thinking in terms of offense as well, not defense right now. You don't build a military-industrial complex on a 21st century standing that doesn't think offensively. Dima.
I agree, and I would add, Umberto Eco, you know, cited one of the typical features of fascism, Nazism, that is, your opponent is at the same denigrated by you as weak and indecisive, whatever, and demonized as sneaking in and penetrating all of your power structures. So we have been hearing that about Russia for, I think, at least 30 years now.
Yeah, but that's all. Everything they claim the Russians are, they are themselves. It's called projection. Keep going, Dima.
Exactly. You know, on the one hand, they say, oh, Putin's regime is weak, it's kleptocratic, it's falling apart, it's unable to do anything. And then at the same time, oh, Russia is so strong, it's so sneaky, you know, they penetrate all of our structures, they're so dangerous, anything can be expected from them. So you have this schizophrenic approach, and you have it reflected in their military policy. You know, Russia's defense spending is at least 5 or 6 times smaller than the defense spending of NATO, and certainly smaller than the spending of European allies inside NATO. You know, there is a lot of statistics about that. From Stockholm Institute of Peace, for example, I guess they said Russia spent about 30 or 40% of what NATO's European allies spend on defense, probably less. But anyway, it makes absolutely no sense for Russia to attack Europe. The other problem is that right now, you know, Russia is fighting Ukraine. And when we strike Ukraine, this is a pain for us, but it's not a pain for the Europeans. You know, for them, yes. Ukraine, whatever the Ukrainian government thinks, whatever it says, for the EU, Ukrainians are parts, you know, people of another civilization inferior to theirs. They don't feel pity. So we're in this situation when we have to strike, I'm sorry, our brothers in order to influence people who have no pity for us or for our brothers. And that's a tragedy. There is no way out of this, because if we strike the real perpetrators, they will say, this is an aggression. Russia attacked NATO. How awful. We have been saying it for all of these years. So it's a dead end created mostly by the European politicians. And
yeah,
by,
but, it, but it's, a self, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, Tariq. Okay? You know, they mean, again, they... by NATOizing Ukraine for 8 years before the start of the special military operation, they believed that they would be able to present Russia with a fait accompli, and Russia would surrender. That's what it was all about, okay? And Russia called its bluff. I mean, at the time, it was the other way around. Oh, the Russians fell for it. No, the Europeans, at the end of the day, fell for their own delusions about European security. So, I mean, I'm profoundly pessimistic here. I mean, I try to look for some. I think hope died, and I've here in other places I've talked about our infatuation with hope, because sometimes that's the only thing that you can grab onto, considering the reckless warmongering rhetoric that comes out of Europe.
Look, I think hope has died for now, right? There I agree. But it is also true that we don't know the future. I think One hope is definitely gone, namely that this war can be ended before much more damage and much more death is caused. Yeah. So now we're in a situation where we will have to go at least through another cycle of damage and death. And this is all going to damage most of all and kill most of all Ukrainians. This is what's going to happen here. And you can see it very clearly. You have talk in countries that have received male Ukrainian refugees is now clearly increasing of sending them back so that they can also be fed into the meat grinder. Leszek Miller, former Polish yes. prime minister, has said it very openly, you know, let's send them all off to the front and so on. So the idea is now somehow we get the money, maybe by stealing the Russian assets and ultimately making the European taxpayer liable. And then we finance 2 to 3 more years of using the Ukrainians up in our attempt to stall Russia. That's all that I can see. It's extremely primitive. It's extremely dumb. It won't end well for the Europeans, of course. But I think it's linked to their fantasies about being war ready themselves in 4 to 5 years, right? There's probably an overlap here where they're basically using up Ukraine as a stalling technique, as cynical as that is. And yeah. the poor Ukrainians don't have a government to defend them against this.
They're the starter on the menu, as it were. All right, gentlemen, fascinating discussion. I want to thank my guests in Istanbul and here in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.